from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm John Sepulveda. Democratic State Senator Tony Mendoza shocked his colleagues yesterday when he abruptly resigned. This comes as lawmakers were considering expelling him following sexual harassment allegations. Here's KQED's Katie Orr.
Earlier this week, senators were given the results of an outside investigation into sexual harassment claims made against Mendoza. The report found more likely than not, Mendoza had harassed six women over the past decade. On Thursday, lawmakers struggled over whether to suspend or expel him. But then a rumor began to spread that Mendoza had resigned. A short time later, Senate President Kevin De Leon confirmed it.
A letter of resignation has been submitted by Senator Tony Mendoza and has been accepted.
In the letter, Mendoza said De Leon wanted his head on a platter and that he wouldn't be treated fairly by Democratic senators running for re-election. De Leon had been pushing for Mendoza's expulsion. The two men used to be roommates in Sacramento, and De Leon was looking to distance himself from Mendoza as he makes a run for the U.S. Senate against Senator Dianne Feinstein. He held Mendoza's resignation up as an example of change in the Capitol.
If we're serious about changing the culture and holding our people accountable for their conduct, we must start here and we must start now.
Mendoza denies the charges against him and said he will continue to pursue his lawsuit against the Senate. He also did not rule out a run for re-election. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
Tony Mendoza will undoubtedly be fodder for gossip at this week's Democratic State Convention. But as KQED's Scott Schaefer reports, the real shop talk will all be about one thing: stopping Donald Trump.
With Republicans controlling Congress and the White House, the theme for this weekend's Democratic Convention is California, the big blue beacon of hope. And State Party Chair Eric Bauman says his priority is simple.
In our worldview, the only way we can slow Trump's divisive and dangerous agenda is to regain at least one House of Congress.
And that means flipping some of the 14 California House seats currently held by Republicans. Grassroots Democrats are definitely motivated, so much so that they almost have too many candidates running in some districts, says UC San Diego political science professor Thad Kauser.
And so you have these seats where Democrats really need to be coming together right now. Instead, they're splitting apart into three, four serious candidates and all of their camps.
A big part of these conventions is winning an official Democratic Party endorsement. To do that, candidates need support from 60% of the delegates, and that's a heavy lift. But for candidates in down-ballot races that don't get much attention from voters, political science professor Kauser says it can be a big help with what he calls political tastemakers.
The people who are going to go home and tell their friends at maybe a union group, maybe the Sierra Club, maybe the Barstow Democrats, who they loved, who they were impressed by, who they should give their money to, and who they should walk precincts for.
One thing sure to be hanging over the convention: turmoil from sexual harassment allegations at the state capitol, where so far only Democrats have been accused of sexual misconduct. For the California Report, I'm Scott Schaefer.
Let's stay with politics. Statewide Democratic office holders did a collective wah after President Trump's suggestion that he might pull immigration agents out of California in retaliation for becoming a so-called sanctuary state. KQED's Tyke Hendricks reports.
U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein called the president's remarks mean-spirited and false. State Attorney General Javier Becerra said California works daily with federal law enforcement to go after serious criminals, but that the state is not in the business of deportation. And advocates in Los Angeles said Trump is obsessed with criminalizing immigrants. ICE officials in California knew nothing about any plan to withdraw agents, and doing so would reverse their current policy of increasing enforcement in sanctuary communities. For the California Report, I'm Tyke Hendricks.
I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical, naked, dragging themselves through the Negro streets at dawn looking for an angry fix.
That's Allen Ginsberg reciting his epic poem Howl in 1959. This work chalked a win for free speech when a California Superior Court judge ruled in favor of the violent, sexually charged poem in a highly publicized obscenity trial. Well, today sees the re-release of Ginsberg reciting the poem in a fancy vinyl box set. And if we're talking fancy, we're hearing from KQED's Chloe Veltman.
For years, poet Tania Nasser Frederick avoided Howl.
People like Allen Ginsberg, poets who like I just stayed away from because they were too popular. I didn't need to read them. Everyone else read them.
But the 24-year-old California native finds the work arresting right now. After the recent school shooting in Florida, he's especially floored by Ginsberg's looming image of the murderous biblical god Moloch.
And the fact that you have this metaphor, the military-industrial complex being a god of child sacrifice, it just hits you over the head with how pertinent that is to this past week.
Unlike Nasser Frederick, 30-something poetry teacher Sam Sachs has long been a Howl groupie. He mentored many Bay Area youth poets, but now lives in New York.
Howl was extremely formative to me in my early writing life because it was the first time I heard a queer poet reading queer poems.
Sachs says Howl hasn't entirely stood the test of time. He points to the opening.
I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical, naked, dragging themselves through the Negro streets at dawn, looking for an angry fix. The Negro streets feels very much a product of the 1950s, and now when we read it, feels like super out of place and racist.
But at a time when the far right has tried to co-opt the free speech movement, Sachs admires the way in which Howl continues to resonate today as people across the political spectrum feel like their First Amendment rights are under fire. For the California Report, I'm Chloe Veltman.
This weekend, Democrats are meeting in San Diego for their state convention. Speaking there will be Delaine Easton. The former state superintendent is running on a campaign to drastically improve education, and a key component of that is keeping net neutrality the law in California and also ensuring every home in the state has access to broadband.
It absolutely should be the right of everyone, and it's something we have to give to our children to make sure they're competitive, as well as to the adults.
And you're saying that California would find a way to pay for broadband in every home?
Yes, I think it has to be something that we do. I mean, we have done a bunch of things that were amazing at the time, and you know, like the University of California and CSU and community college all at one time.
If the internet is a utility, then it would raise the question whether some of these utility companies are, in fact, monopolies.
Well, I'm not prepared to say that yet. I do think you cannot allow a few very big companies who are here really because we had a free market concept to wreck the free market.
What about a company like Google, which you could arguably say is essentially using an infrastructure created by the government that to extend in all these different lines, including artificial intelligence, including self-driving cars? Should a company like Google be allowed to continue in the way that it has?
You know, I unless we see some real examples of, you know, pushing people out of the marketplace and or other kind of thuggery that isn't appropriate, we should let 1,000 flowers bloom because, you know, in our history, part of the genius of California is that people came here with real energy and a sense of tomorrow. You know, the old, so sing my friends, be blithe, be gay, or weep my friends with sorrow. What California is today, the rest will be tomorrow.
You know, Chairman Mao, when he said let 100 flowers bloom, he then executed many of the people who...
I understand, but I don't see Google trying to execute anybody. And generally, there's an openness and an invigoration that comes from creativity and from a changing economic and intellectual environment. And that's what we want to stimulate. We want everybody to be curious. Mm. We want them to be nimble. We want them to be excited about the future. And that's who California used to be and should be again.
Should they be paying more in taxes? Should they be paying...
Well, I would, as I said before, I would change Prop 13 to have a periodic reassessment of commercial industrial properties over a certain amount. I think it is true that, you know, we do need some resources to make sure we can build these new colleges and universities, educate K-12, and provide for preschool and some of the other child development needs we've got. I like to say the Silicon Valley was born in California, not because of a confluence of rivers. We have no Tigris or no Euphrates. What we had was a confluence of great colleges and universities and educational opportunities.
The prospect of you becoming governor, It seems that you are one of the most qualified, at least on paper, based on your resume, your years of service. Yet your name is not often in the top tier. We often hear of Antonio Villaraigosa. We often hear of Gavin Newsom. Why do you think that is?
Well, it is harder for women. I mean, there's been a lot of research done over the years, I know.
And California has not had a woman governor.
It is still harder in the big states to elect women to legislative positions, to mayor, and to constitutional officer, including governor.
And you think that is sexism?
I think it is. Yeah. Illinois has never had a woman governor. Florida has never had a woman governor. Texas had one for one term.
Ann Richards.
The great Ann Richards and her great daughter, who's just been the head of Planned Parenthood. You know, not only is half the state made up of women, but we have a lot of people in the shadows right now. We need to have somebody who's going to shine the bright light and create everybody an energy about California, about living in California and staying in California, because in fact we have a brilliant future. But we have a brilliant future if we support the people that live here with education, with clean environment, with housing that's affordable, with good transportation and infrastructure. We can do a lot in California. We just need a little more imagination and somebody with a brass backbone.
Ms. Easton, thank you so much for joining us.
It was my great pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, there's another Democratic woman running for governor who will not speak at the state party convention. Amanda Renteria's surprise jump into the race came too late to get onto the convention agenda. The late entry and her relative inexperience has many politicos suspecting she's jumping in the race to hurt fellow Latino Antonio Villaraigosa and to help Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. The Central Valley native and former Hillary Clinton staffer told R. Scott Schaefer, that is cynical Sacramento speculation.
The idea that people don't believe anyone anymore can run for the right reasons really is saying something about our politics, because as you look at my career and at every juncture when I was a teacher, you know, when I went to Harvard Business School, and very few people at a Harvard Business School go into public service, but I did. When I was at the height of my career in D.C. as a chief of staff, and most people go to lobby shops, I didn't. I came back home to try and inspire others. I have not ever, not once, taken the money or taken the deal.
Can you point, though, to an issue? Can you point to an issue in California where there has been a lack of courage, a lack of leadership in Sacramento, for example, that you would provide if you had been there, if you had been governor?
I think the fact that you have still some of the poorest areas, again, where I grew up, still some of the poorest areas in this state, and we have yet to figure out and yet to put real attention on how do we make sure that we don't have income inequality in California. We might not be able to do something about the broader picture in our nation, but man, we've got so much incredible access and talent and resources in our big cities. And what are we doing to make sure that we have one California and we're thinking about, you know, our families that are from places that don't have the kind of resources that maybe we see in the Bay Area, for instance. And the fact that, you know, for a very long time, I would consider even now, we haven't had that connection to all parts of our state really matters.
That was Democratic candidate for governor Amanda Renteria speaking with KQED's Scott Schaefer.
Support for the California Report comes from the James Irvine Foundation, honoring the recipients of the 2018 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards. Learn more at irvine.org. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. And the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children and youth at risk.
And that's the California Report for Friday, February 23rd, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineers are Danny Bringer, Katie McMurrin, Jim Bennett, and Howie Gelman. I'm John Sepulveda. Have a great weekend.